You are listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. Well, we're only a few weeks into 2013, and already I would argue that the major theme emerging in the world of sports this year is drugs. We've had the punitive vote by the baseball writers, where they elected exactly zero people to be in the 2013 Hall of Fame class. Of course, Lance Armstrong admitted that he doped. And now today, two separate stories are breaking that involve names like Alex Rodriguez and Ray Lewis, and a link to a substance called IFG-1 that is found in, among other places, deer antlers. It's crazy. And here's the thing about doping. They're drugs. And as we know, all drugs are not the same. We don't think about Advil the way we think about heroin. And when you look at the Lance Armstrong thing, words that get thrown around are words like regimen and cocktail and sophisticated. Well, journalist David Ewing Duncan says that not only is this field sophisticated, it's advancing, and whether we know it or not, we are in the midst of an arm race. He's with me now by phone, David Ewing Duncan, author, journalist, and he recently wrote a piece called So Long, Lance, Next 21st Century Doping for the New York Times. Welcome to Boston Public Radio, David.
Happy to be here.
So, this is an arms race. What do you mean by we are in the midst of an arms race? Who is in this arms race, and what's at stake here?
Well, the underlying arms race is really a science arms race that's developing very rapidly a whole new ranges of what might be called enhancers. But that's actually not the intention, of course, of the people developing these, drug companies, researchers, physicians, and others. They're developing a lot of therapies to try to help people with deficiencies, with diseases. But those are actually pushing over a barrier into a realm where people can use them for enhancers. And many of them have been around for a very long time, and I'm sure people have heard of most of them, but the piece I wrote in the Times suggests that we're about to push into ever more exotic realms of these therapies, which are, again, created to help people, which might end up helping healthy people, especially athletes, really push into new realms.
Has it ever been thus? I mean, is this kind of how doping has it sort of always advanced hand in hand with just medical advancement, and it's just that medical advancement is on the cusp of something new, that doping is on the cusp of something new, or have we seen that relationship change over time?
Well, I looked up some of the history of this for the piece, and doping, in fact, has always been around. It was in the ancient Olympics in ancient Greece. At that point,
what were they doping with then? Yeah.
Well, it was things like magic mushrooms and herbs and
prayers.
Even black magic, which, of course, you can decide whether it really worked or not. But they were using all kinds of ways, essentially to sort of cheat, yeah, and try to succeed. And it started in the modern Olympics. People were taking amphetamines. They were even taking poisons like strychnine. There were a couple of runners in the early Olympics. I couldn't find out what actually happened to them. I'm not sure you want to be taking yeah, a deadly poison like that. But yeah, it's been around for a very long time.
I think when I think when we talk about performance enhancing drugs right now with sports, immediately it becomes a bit of a moral argument. It becomes about whether they're cheating or not. And I think it's important to try to look at it dispassionately, at least sometimes, to be able to look and say, okay, well, what's really going on here? As I was saying earlier, I mean, the fact of the matter is, just from simply a scientific standpoint, not all drugs are the same, right? When we say drugs, some are stronger than others, some affect the body more than others, and some are legal and some are illegal. Can you break down for us a little bit about the different kinds of enhancers that are being used now and how they maybe differ from each other in terms of, how they're affecting the body?
Sure. In fact, we're not even talking about exclusively drugs here. There are lots of other methods for enhancing, and that's part of what I get into. Is it's about to get really crazy, with machine parts and things like that. We can talk about that in a minute. But yeah, I mean, most people probably have taken an aspirin in their life, and it's still not entirely understood all of the mechanisms behind aspirin. And, there's some toxicity involved with even something as basic as aspirin or other, you know, mild painkillers. You know, you can go through the whole list. It's interesting because in something like aspirin, obviously, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of people have taken it. So we have some sense that it's safe. But every time you put something in your body or in your mouth, you know, you're taking a small risk. But the question with some of these newer enhancers, even something like steroids and certainly erythropoietin, which is known as EPO, which is one of the drugs that Lance Armstrong used, which bumps up your red blood cell count, which gives you more oxygen and helps you pump up those mountains. You know, these are relatively new drugs. They're prescription drugs. You know, you're supposed to take them under the, you know, under the aegis of a physician, which is not always done, of course, with sports people.
Right.
But even on these prescription drugs, it's there's a question that needs to be answered, I think, about how safe or unsafe some of the lower doses are of even some of these prescription drugs. And that gets into an interesting sort of realm of who's saying what about the safety and what's real about the testing that's been done in terms of research on how safe these are for healthy people.
I'm talking with David Ewing Duncan. He's an author, journalist, recently wrote a piece in the New York Times called So Long, Lance, Next 21st Century Doping, which looks a little bit ahead at where we're going to be going with advancements in doping, in particular with athletes, and some of the things that are possibly on the horizon. You know, you were just talking about, you know, we don't necessarily know the dangers of some of these. How does the world anti-doping agencies or, you know, the people who are at the head of, say, the NFL or Major League Baseball, how are they right now, David, determining which sort of drugs or processes or whatever are okay and which are banned? I mean, are they on top of this stuff, or do you think that they're kind of losing the battle too here?
Well, it's been a continuum. In many of the newer drugs were introduced, well, actually as long ago as the 60s and 70s, but, you know, as science has advanced, these drugs have gotten better and better. You know, people have gotten better at using them, athletes, their trainers, even physicians that are helping really elite athletes like Lance Armstrong. And this really began to become a part of a sport like, say, elite bicycling in the late 80s, 90s, early 1000s, 2000s. And as that sort of use and sophistication among the athletes increased, the powers that be had to really decide what to do about it. And they came down pretty hard and pretty harsh starting about 10 or 12 years ago, especially in a sport like bicycling, which had actually had banned these substances for many years, unlike, say, Major League Baseball, which, you know, when you had people like Barry Bonds allegedly taking steroids, it actually was not against the rules in baseball at the time. So different sports handle it different ways. But it's been a bit of a catch-up over the last 10 years. But when you talk to the authorities like the World Anti-Doping Association and the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, you know, they feel like they're certainly more on top of it now than they have been. But you asked about the arms race earlier, and part of the arms race is you literally have two groups opposed to each other kind of duking it out. You know, you have the athletes who are still doping on the one hand and all the people around them, and then you have these organizations which have been ramping up very, very quickly in the last few years, both in terms of resources and the science. But the question is whether they really can keep up.
So right now, you would say that the doping agencies are they're on the losing end of this arms race right now. They're losing the battle. Are they? Does that look to increase as we move forward? I mean, you were just talking about machine parts. I mean, what?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, no, I don't think it's fair to say that they're losing by any means. In fact, I think the thinking behind these different anti-doping initiatives has been actually acknowledging that they can't really stop a lot of this, but they're using the really strong or the tactic of really coming down hard, especially on a few leading athletes like Lance Armstrong and others. And they're trying to essentially use fear as a motivation.
It's like arresting somebody in a high profile case, right? So that people know, like, hey, this could happen to you.
Exactly. And that has changed. That I think that has certainly influenced a lot of sports. You know, Major League Baseball being the most recent one. And when you see, you know, these players that would have been a shoo-in in the Hall of Fame not being voted in and probably never will be, you know, you are having an effect. There was a time when a lot of this was people just looked aside. You know, they knew that the doping was going on. You know, in baseball, there are stories of players back in even the 50s and 60s taking amphetamines on a regular basis, for instance. And people were just, you know, looking the other way for a long time. So it's not fair to say that it hasn't had an influence. The question is, you know, how much of an influence, and are they kind of driving this underground, and is it really having the overall effect of completely cleansing sports? And I would posit, and I think most of the people I talked to for the article, that it has not.
Yeah, but, you know, it's interesting. It's sort of, there's a question of where people tend to draw lines with this stuff, right? Because like you said, people were sort of looking the other ways when players were using amphetamines back in the 60s and 70s. And I think on some level, people are sort of like, well, I don't know. Like, what's, you know, is it okay to have a triple shot of espresso before a game with all that caffeine to get you like perked up? Is that different than amphetamines? Is that different than injecting something into your bloodstream? I think on some level, it's a question of where you sort of draw the line on. You know, one thing is a performance enhancing drug that somehow fundamentally changed you, and one is just a little something to, you know, pick you up, you know?
Well, exactly.
You know, as you look ahead, I mean, I think that, you know, my question is that line moving? Are people going to continue to accept as you know, the doping becomes more sophisticated? Are people going to accept certain things, you know, that once might have been considered too far and say, well, this isn't as bad as grafting a machine to your arm to have a bionic arm. He's just putting some red blood cells into his system.
Right, right. And in fact, I think the first thing you need to do, you know, with a lot of these stories, especially the Lance Armstrong, is you need to separate out what actually people are most upset about. And, you know, Lance basically lied. He even ruined people's lives. I mean, he's admitted to all of that. And, you know, those are things that we as a society really, really frown upon. And you have to separate out that from the fact that he doped. And it's unclear how upset people really are about that. I mean, every time I talk to people, you know, just normal people, you know, at the water cooler sort of thing, about this whole issue, they say, well, everyone was doing it, in the Tour de France, and there's a lot of evidence to support that a huge number of people were doping. And you get into these nuances of what's fair, what's not, what's cheating, what's not. I mean, they were violating the rules, and that's the basic definition of cheating. So, of course, they were cheating. But you know, if you've got right now, for instance, one of the ways that athletes are apparently getting around some of the testing is what they call microdoses of certain drugs, like this EPO drug, which is actually a natural substance. It just mimics what goes on in your body in producing red blood cells. And you do a tiny dose before an event, and it's cleared from your body pretty much by the time the event's over or just after. And you know, you might get a little bump. Is that bad? I mean, right. You know, you're violating the rules, so it's cheating. But does that make sense as a rule?
And do you think the rule? Do you look out at the future and the people that you've talked to? As you look out at the future, do you see those rules changing? Where do we end up 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now? Do people just want good sports and they don't really care if as long as it's not breaking the rules? Are they okay with people doping, becoming half machine? I mean.
Yeah, well, we've been titillating people with this whole machine thing. So,
one
of the things that I like to write about is at the moment, you know, as a life science kind of biotech writer, is as I'm looking at the landscape of you know, biomedical advances, it's hard to not see in the future, you know, 10, 20 years, the possibility anyway that people will be able to take really radical leaps in how they enhance. You know, starting with genetics, we saw Oscar Pistorius, the runner from South Africa, actually compete in the Olympic Games, you know, with missing both of his legs from the knees down.
Yeah.
And at first they were worried he wouldn't be able to keep up, and then they were a little worried he might be too fast. Yeah. And so I think we're just at the cusp of a range of issues here, you know, how we're going to you know, should we combat this at the levels we are now? You know, how do you determine, you know, what is an enhancer? Are there allowable levels? I mean, you mentioned caffeine. I mean, caffeine is a huge stimulant, especially, you know, as I study the genetics and or talk to people who study it, some people have a much bigger impact of taking caffeine than others. I mean, should that be banned? I think this whole enhancement issue, and even beyond sports, is something that we need to really wrap around and figure out how we're going to handle it.
What's at stake in this argument? You know, you say we need to look at it. We need to get our heads around it. We need to understand it. Why? What's at stake here?
Well, ultimately, it's how we want to conduct ourselves in different facets of life, like sports. But ultimately, it's what are we as humans? I mean, you know, immediately when you start talking to bioethicists and other people about these issues, you jump into the philosophical questions of, you know, what does it mean? I mean, is Oscar Pistorius, is it still a human race? And this happened right now, you know, in 2012, just last year. You know, is that still a human race, and what does that even mean? Is, you know, part of him is not flesh and blood, but he was able to race. And what happens when you get even more advanced prosthetics of the sort that are being developed right now that could allow people to run a whole lot faster than a human with flesh and blood legs? And so ultimately, we really have to start asking some questions about where we want to go with this as a species.
All right. David Ewing Duncan, author, journalist, and the man behind a recent piece in the New York Times. So long, Lance. Next 21st Century Dopin'. Thanks for asking the big questions with us today on Boston Public Radio.
Thanks, Edgar.
And here's Callie Crossley, who I know is on no performance-enhancing drugs. She
None.
Is clean and fully talented. Coming to the mic.
That's exactly right. I'm doing a total switch in conversation. Talk about one of my favorite topics, food trucks.
All right. I love it. Yeah. What do we got to do to get food trucks right outside this window?
This is what I want to know, and I'll be asking that question.
Excellent. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, hungry and ready to listen to Callie Crossley here
Me
on
too.
Boston Public Radio.
And I'm Callie Crossley.